All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Welcome to American Vindicta. This is part two of the Enemies of the State series. Today's focus is our Lord Jesus. I want to read something to you as if it was read out of Roman lips itself. You can imagine after the crucifixion that something like this would have been said. To all these in present, greetings from Rome. Jesus of Nazareth, enemy of the state, has been executed for treason. Jesus of Nazareth was executed today on the orders of the Roman state. Method of execution was crucifixion. The charge under Roman law was treason, and under Herodian law, blasphemy against the temple. The evidence against this anarchist was so strong that the authorities of both the Roman state and the kingdom of Herod concurred with the arrest and execution, and he was subjected to trial by both governments. And in a rare uprising of spontaneous collective justice, the mass of people who were gathered for Passover called for his execution as well. The mob affirmed their loyalty to the state by chanting, "We have no king but Caesar." Friday's execution ended a career as an anti-government agitator with a long history of lawlessness. The family was in possession of falsified, illegal, and unsanctioned genealogical records, which claimed to indicate that Jesus was of royal lineage and undermined the legitimate claim of Herod to the throne. The malicious claim, which has been spread widely among the people, is that King Herod is an Edomite and not a Jew. The king is tormented by this claim and laments that shortly after his father's rise to power, the genealogical records, which would certainly have proven his legitimate right to reign, has perished in a mysterious fire, likely set by anti-government agitators. Even as a young child, Jesus was recognized as an enemy of the state and has sentenced to death by the current king's predecessor, Herod the Great. Subversive foreign agents lied to the king, and with their help, Jesus and his family escaped the lawful orders of the government authority by illegally immigrating to Egypt, where they remained in hiding until the death, hold that, of the king. Afterwards, they are known to have illegally immigrated back into Greater Israel, where they settled in Galilee toward the edge of the kingdom, and far from the swift justice of the capital region. Jesus, who is also treasonously called the Christ by his followers, embarked on a public career roughly 3 years ago with the assistance of his cousin John, who himself has been executed by the state for lack of respect for the office of the king. Jesus was a career criminal included public insults of the king, calling King Herod a fox and a reed blowing in the wind, implying that the Roman state was under God and not properly the other way around. Harassment of government officials, including at least one tax collector and one Sanhedrin member, as well as ordering and or encouraging these people to remit wealth back to the people from whom it was lawfully taxed. He was also guilty of a series of actions which treasonously called into legitimacy organs of the state, such as Herod's temple. For example, he offered forgiveness and fellowship with God to sinners, violating the temple monopoly of public expiation and forgiveness. Furthermore, he illegally trespassed on government property, and he interfered with state-sanctioned money-changing operations, which were properly operating with the permission of the appointees of the king at state-approved exchange rates. He was able, for a time, to avoid arrest through a tactic of cleverly disguising his anti-government propaganda in the form of coded answers, suggestive but ambiguous analogies, and confusing aphorisms by which he managed to gather a following without giving clear evidence of his treasonous views. However, his anti-government propaganda eventually became undeniable, predicting the destruction of Herod's temple and even denying its legitimacy, declaring it to be desolate. His execution was swift and merciless, and his disciples have been scattered. Authorities are confident that his name will quickly be forgotten. While Rome, the eternal city, will last forever. The temple built on the power of the Roman state and Herodian kingship will stand forever. Authorities assure the people that the ultimate punishment on which all the state power rests, death by execution, is the final word on this short episode in our Roman history. That is all. You may go back to your duties and your lives. Ave Imperator. Hail Caesar. Surprising enough, that was actually wrote by a man named Jerry Bowyer from Forbes.com. And that was titled Jesus of Nazareth, Enemy of the State, Executed for Treason. It was a great article to read. So, if you've never heard of a website called the Christian Exile, I suggest you give this a look. It's a great website. I'm going to read to you three articles from here today. It goes along with the enemy of the state and being the main focus is Jesus. They kind of did my homework for me. I had a whole thing laid out, but you know, when someone does something a lot better than you, best thing to do is to give credit to them. So the people over the Christian Exile, Jesus, enemy of the state, and then we're going to read into nine things Jesus said that should impact the way a Christian approaches politics, and then finally, kingdoms in conflict, an important yet overlooked theme in the Bible. Now, I'm going to read this. I'm going to give my commentary. Hopefully, we can get the entire hour out of this. God, I think, was it 7, 9? Yeah, I mean, we got, you know, just 26 pages to read from, so it should go fast. All right, so starting with Jesus, enemy of the state. Why is this so important for me to be doing this right now? Well, because all around the world, you are seeing persecution, mainly against people who are freedom-loving people, and who are of traditional values. And that typically means that we're talking about inherently Christian values in people of the Christian faith. You will not find anybody, except for China, that is mercilessly going after people that are Buddhists from the Falun Gong or people that are from the Muslim faith, even though the Taliban says that China is their number one ally. That's a real statement. And they're, you know, consistently killing hundreds of thousands of people a year from the Uyghur Muslim sect in China. But hey, you know what? We'll just ignore that one, won't we? Oh, good old American politics. We ignore evil as long as we're making money off of it. All right, so here we go. Christians' relationship to government. Many Christians have a philosophy of what a good government should look like. And for their philosophy, for the most part, is closely connected to their religious beliefs. Some have taken this is so far that they have no problems with singing God Bless America in worship, having the American flag flying in front of their church building, or having quotes from the Founding Fathers posted in their classrooms. After all, God ordained government. Isn't that right? So what could possibly be wrong with such demonstrations of patriotism in our places of worship? Yet very few can explain these answers to these questions, such as, where did governments come from? What was God's purpose in ordaining these governments? What kind of relationship did God expect his children to have with these earthly governments? What did the prophets foretell about the destiny of earthly governments? God ordained government. And in the Garden of Eden, God was the only ruler. Yet, beginning with Adam, man continued to rebel until the earth was divided. Divided into a multiplicity of kingdoms after the fall of the Tower of Babel, or Babel, however you people pronounce it. Throughout the Old Testament, God expected Israel to remain separate from these Gentile kingdoms, refraining from making alliances with them. When Israel adopted the form of government that was used by these earthly kingdoms at that time, God had viewed this as a rejection of his own kingship over them. Now, as a result of this rejection of God, Israel ended up being enslaved by these governments. During this time of exile, the prophets foretold a time when God would return as a king and earthly governments would be destroyed. Throughout this time, God did continually ordain these earthly governments as his ministers through which he punished evildoers and taught important lessons to his children. Yet, throughout the Old Testament, God's faithful children maintained a submissive relationship with the earthly governments which had surrounded them, continually trusting that God would vindicate his people by ultimately defeating these wicked nations. So here's a question for you then. Did Jesus change all of that? Did Jesus reintroduce earthly Gentile governments in a kinder, gentler light? Did he, in fact, endorse these governments in their claim to rule over people in social, economic, and all other areas of their life? Did Jesus start a new mindset towards governments, beginning a new trajectory because of which Christians can now work through earthly governments to provide protection for the weak and the vulnerable? Or to protect private property and keep people safe from our enemies? Or protect
fair wages for workers, or to otherwise encourage morality in our society. Certainly, if anyone had authority to change the relationship of God's people towards the Gentile rulers of the world, Jesus, the Lord of Lords, is the one who would have that authority. Yet in everything Jesus said and did, Jesus was an enemy of the state. No, Jesus was not a lawbreaker. No, Jesus was not the William Wallace of his day, leading rebellions by cavalry charge. He wasn't leading some sort of great Jewish revolution against the Romans. No, Jesus was not the leader of a great tax rebellion. He was submissive to the governing authorities. He was a peacemaker, and that's going to upset plenty of you out there who cling to your guns as if that is the savior of this country and of your own soul. Jesus taught the importance of loving his enemies, even those who had aligned themselves with the state, such as Matthew, the tax collector. But he was an enemy of the state nonetheless. Herod viewed him as an enemy when he was born, and the Romans executed him as an enemy on the cross. As the king, Jesus will destroy all of his enemies, including the rule, the authority, and the power of the state. That's 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 24 to 26. Now, consider what we know about Jesus' relationship towards governing authorities under which he had lived. At the time of his birth, Herod viewed Jesus as a threat and attempted to have him executed as a child. He killed every child under the age of what, one? Jesus and his family were forced to live as exiles in Egypt. When Jesus was tempted in the wilderness by Satan, Satan tempted him with all the what power? All the political power in the world. Jesus had every opportunity to reform his world with a good government, yet he rejected this offer, choosing rather to obey the scriptures where it is written, "You shall worship the Lord your God, and him only you shall serve." Now, during his ministry, the ruling elite often sought to have Jesus executed, refraining only because they feared the people. John the Baptist, a very popular man of his age, came to prepare the way for our Lord Christ. This task included commanding soldiers not to forcefully take money from anyone, which is Luke 3:14. John the Baptist's task also included rebuking King Herod publicly by applying the laws of God to the head of the state. As you have heard in Mark 6:18, it is not lawful for you to have your brother's wife. Jesus often spoke out against the supporters of King Herod. Watch out. Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. Mark 8:15. Jesus characterized King Herod as that fox. Luke 13:32. Jesus forbade his disciples from living like Gentile government officials. You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. It is not this way among you, but whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. Matthew 20, verses 25 and 26. Jesus denied that the tax collectors had the right to collect taxes from the sons, i.e. the sons of God. His condemnation of taxation was clear enough that Jesus had to clarify that he was not calling for tax rebellion as the appropriate response. Then the sons are exempt. However, so that we do not offend them, give it to them. Matthew 17, verses 25 to 27. On another occasion, Jesus challenged his hearers to examine their personal allegiance. That's Luke 20, verses 22 to 26. Both Caesar and God claim to be divine and rightful rulers of the world, hence the examination of this inscription on the coin. When Jesus said, "Render unto Caesar that things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." He revealed that Caesar's claims to the world and God's claims to the world are mutually exclusive. He left his questioners amazed as they were left to consider what really belonged to Caesar and what really belonged to God. You know, that's an interesting point in the way that Jesus answered that. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and render unto God what is God's. Is that not how we should be living today? I know for many of you it's hard seeing the way our world has turned out and the way our government has become a recluse of itself. But Jesus handled all these things passively. With great, by the way, great determination, but gentleness. No one could ever say he was an aggressor, but only an agitator. Well, a fly can agitate you. The way Jesus protested, and I don't mean to say it like that, but that is the way it is in this view, as an enemy of the state, was the perfect way to do it. Hey, what are we supposed to do about Caesar? Give me that coin. Whose face is this? And everybody says, Caesar's. Then render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and render unto what is God's, God's, as he flicks the coin back to him, right? Render unto Caesar that things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. What should we render unto this government? And at what point should we say, you are not God, you do not command me of all these things? That's a good question. I'd love to hear someone take that one up. This helps explain why Jesus was accused of instigating tax rebellion during his trial, which was an accusation that would have been laughed out of court unless Jesus was publicly recognized as having been opposed to taxation. From Luke 23:2, and they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king." Jesus was an enemy of the state. Any attempt to repaint Jesus as a nice, government-supporting, patriotic citizen does not do justice to the text of the Bible. Throughout the Gospels, Jesus is continually shown to have been at odds with the government officials. But before I go any further, I want to ask you something. Did Jesus show up in his multicam plate carrier and helmet and his, you know, $800 rifle? Did Jesus show up in masses looking like asses? Did Jesus show up and set fire to buildings? Did Jesus show up and chase people out of towns or beat them to death in the streets? There is a way to do things, and then there is not a way to do things. And what you all need to be very clear of is that the God of this world, Satan, manipulates the Democrats and the Republicans, and many of you are falling in the trap. And that's why many of you fell in the trap of January 6. You got sucked into it. As we say in close quarters battle or CQB, You got sucked into the corner. You focused too much on the corner when you rounded the door. You weren't looking for all the other angles. You weren't looking for work everywhere else. You weren't looking for the other bad guys in the room. You were focused right there on that corner as soon as you button hooked or you crossed into the door. Right in through that fatal funnel. And that's why I tell many of you out there, if you listen to me at all, if you're going to go protest, protest. Don't show up like you're ready to go and, you know, storm the beaches of Normandy. Continuing. When texts such as "render unto Caesar" are taken out of context and twisted so as to make it sound like Jesus placed his stamp of approval on government-initiated theft and violence, the Gospels lose their coherence. And throughout the Gospels, Jesus is continually shown to have been at odds with the government officials. Continuously. So why would Jesus continually exalt God's law above state authority in one breath and then suggest that state officials have a special exemption from laws such as "thou shalt not steal" in the next? Why would Jesus criticize the way that Gentile rulers lord over their people in one breath and then approve of their right to lord over men in the next? Why would Jesus instruct soldiers to refrain from forcefully taking money and deny the right of the tax collectors to collect taxes if he believed that Caesar's right in his claim to that money? Why would Jesus have been executed by his government if his government saw him as a supportive citizen? All that Jesus did in confronting earthly rulers is because his allegiance was given to a different kingdom, the kingdom of God. Jesus was going through all the cities and villages and teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. That's Matthew 9:35. And yet they prosecuted him and they executed him over that. The gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come. Matthew 24:14. Fairly soon, friends, every man, woman, and child on this earth will have the ability to have an iPhone in their hands. And it'll either be the platform of Twitter or some other platform when everybody at one point in time, from the cannibals in the Congo, as they used to say on Full Metal Jacket, to the Aborigines that are out in the outback of Australia, to the lost tribes of the Amazon, everyone will eventually get this technology. We're, what, less than a decade away? I have a problem with a lot of people within the Christian movement who run around saying that the sky is falling, buy my book, buy my TV series, come to my conference, buy my shirt, support me, continuously telling you that the rapture is going to happen any day now. On this date, it'll happen. It is important to note, I'm going to get off my soapbox for a second before I get myself in trouble. It is important to note that while Jesus had an antagonistic relationship with the governing authorities of his day, he never advocated for violent opposition towards them. Jesus never advocated tax rebellion. Jesus understood that their positions of power came from God. You would have no authority over me unless it had been given you from above. John 19, verse 11. Jesus continually turned the other cheek when he was confronted by his enemies. He continually submitted to their authority, even to the point of death. Now, I have a personal bit of insight on the turn the cheek part. I've gathered so far that in some of the ancient rites, turning the cheek means you struck me once. That might have been your folly. So I'm going to turn the other cheek to you and see if you really meant what you just did. Strike again, I dare you. That is what Jesus did, but as a representation of God on earth, speaking for himself as himself, God allowed man's folly and his arrogance and pride and hubris by being tempted through these temptations by the devil to want to rule over this world, struck their only Savior, the only righteous one to have ever lived. How many of them do you think now are sitting amongst others in a lake of fire? Jesus did not revile in return. While suffering, he uttered no threats, but kept entrusting himself to him who judges righteously. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 23. Jesus understood that his victory over the Roman rulers would not come by political strength, but rather by submission to God. And this he left an example to follow in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 21. Now, long ago, the prophet Daniel had prophesied that the kingdom that Jesus established would be in opposition to and ultimately destroy the kingdoms of this world. As we read from Daniel, "In the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed, and that kingdom will not be left for another people. It will crush and put an end to all these kingdoms, but it will itself endure forever." Daniel 2, verse 44. The only source of power possessed by earthly governments is the threat of the power of death, right? With the resurrection of Jesus, the power of death is destroyed, and the fate of all kingdoms of this world is then sealed. Then comes the end, when he hands over the kingdom to the God and Father, when he has abolished all rule and all authority and all power. For he must reign until he has put all his enemies under his feet. The last enemy that will be abolished is death. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 24 to 26. In the meantime, let us not forget the destiny of governments under which we now live. We have no obligation to pledge our allegiance to any of these condemned kingdoms. We have no responsibility to give revenants to their flags. We must be careful not to maintain the pagan myths of state power, knowing that because of King Jesus, their power has been destroyed. This is why you Christians are persecuted and exiled, and that is why we are the enemy of the state, and why this series is being done. Our responsibility is to go and make disciples, proclaiming to them that all authority has been given to King Jesus in heaven and on earth. And may we continually give thanks to the Father that he has rescued us from the domain of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved Son. Colossians 1:13. And may we continually dedicate our loyalty, our allegiance and our lives to Jesus, the enemy of the state. You know, there's a lot of things that I could say about the current state and atmosphere of America and our sense of want. But the thing that I acknowledge more than anything else, even though we want to be free, we want our Constitution, we want our freedom of speech, right to bear arms, you want your government out of your lives as much as humanly possible, and rightly so, I agree with you. But how many of you want to be ruled by pagan leadership? And how many of you want the eternal gift of true freedom? That's why I'm not scared of this government. And that's why many of you email me, very vicious emails, by the way, at times. I've had some people call me a coward. I've had some people say that I don't go far enough. I've had a couple of you idiots say, Doug, why don't you start a militia and we'll follow you? No thanks, FBI. Good try. Violence is not the answer. I'm going to say that again. Violence is not the answer. Violence is the reaction to violence. I will bring no violence to any man or woman on this earth unless they bring it to me. And I believe that's the way, you know, people should probably attempt to live their lives. But when you have a wealthy elite who prey upon the blood of children, who want your freedoms, who want your money, they want your land, they want your subservience, they want you to be slaves to the system. Well, who runs the system? Who's the real masters of that world? The reason why we cannot answer violence with violence, and I'm going to tell you why, and I know a lot of you guys and gals will hee-haw all day long on your keyboard about this, but you cannot bring the level of violence that the government can bring now. It's not 1773 or 75 or 76 or the 1840s and 50s and 60s. We're beyond flintlocks and repeating rifles now. This is fifth generation warfare now. These people, if they want, can shut down your every bit of your life. No Visa, no MasterCard, no bank account, no cell phone service, no internet access. They won't give you grants to loans. They won't let you get in their college. I mean, they can omit you from their government if they want. Laura Loomer is a person who lived through that. I've tried getting her on the show a couple times. But I was driving around in my, what we called a Govy, but my police vehicle at that point in time when I worked for DHS. And I was listening to InfoWars and I was hearing Laura Loomer cry her eyes out. I'm banned on Twitter, on Facebook. I can't get any reports done now. Nobody will hire me. I don't have a bank account. They canceled my MasterCard. They canceled my Cash App. They canceled my PayPal. I mean, they had the ability to completely omit this woman's life. And who came to her side to help her? This is what your government can do to you. Many of you are so worried about fixing bayonets and charging towards the federal police and National Guard and the UN. And I listen to a lot of what, you know, you blowhards say. And that's what most of you are, blowhards. And I, you know, no offense to anyone when I say this, but a lot of you guys who tally back and forth in militias, and Joe, a guy who just recently emailed me, I'm not counting you in this, so you know, don't take offense when I say this, Joe. But a lot of you people who want to go and play army, you know, once a month in your militias, who do you think is inside that militia with you? It's the FBI or some sort of confidential informant of the state. There's a word to describe you. Compromised. You're compromised. And they are going to set you up for failure successfully. They're going to, like they did with the 13 guys in the militia that were trying to apparently, was it kidnap Governor Whitmer? Paid for it. Set the whole thing up. Personally, as a law enforcement officer, I find stuff like that to be very, very embarrassing because on the border, and this is just my closed-minded thought, on the border in Texas, we have literal cartels that have taken over towns. Doctors, city officials, police, attorneys, on the payroll. Directors of the FBI in El Paso in the 90s, on the payroll. So, we worry so much about holding the boot on top of the neck of American people that we forget that there's a whole other world out there that wants to come and put their boot on top of your neck as well. So, Christians, that's why I implore you to be more like Christ. Don't listen. Don't listen to me. All right, I am a flawed man, but Christ was not. He had the right approach to this. Call out the evil. Be stern in your voice. But that doesn't mean light your Molotov. Let the fire come from your words. That's what we're doing. We're calling out the sins of the leaders. No one said shots fired towards the leaders. That's what this leftist government does. That's what this leftist group that sponsors the government does. They're the ones carrying out the assassinations. They're the ones who have been tearing down your cities. They've been the ones who have been killing people in the protests and in the riots. They're the ones who are pushing the transgenderism. They're the ones who are pushing pedophilia to become a protected, like, sexual orientation. They're the ones who raised your taxes consistently. Oh, by the way, the Republicans are right there with them. And don't think they're not. My eyes have never been more open than as they are now. The more I remove myself from the Republican Party, the more I see. And this is just my own personal opinion, but do not tell me that you're a God-loving Christian and then say you support homosexual marriage, you support homosexual adoption of children. Either be a Christian or don't be a Christian. And that's my problem with, and I'm going to probably put my foot in my mouth when I say this, but that's my problem with Charlie Kirk. Don't stand there on ceremony and quote the Bible and then support a reprobate behavior. That is the accountability amongst ourselves that needs to be happening. I don't care at all if Donald Trump gets reelected. I like Donald Trump. But I don't care at all if he gets elected or if Ron DeSantis gets elected or some other damn leftist gets elected. I don't care because they all fail us at the end. None of these men are perfect. None of them are the saviors. None of them are Christ. And just like we saw before, whenever one Republican gets in, the Democrats raise up a standard, which typically has been more powerful than the Republicans in office. And then the Republicans are null and void for 4 years. And then it's the leftists' turn again. But when the leftists get on board, buddy, they go 1,000 miles per hour. They don't care if they cut corners. They don't care about the Bill of Rights. They don't care about the Constitution. They broke the commandments on top of Mount Zion. These people do not care about you. They are the real enemy of the state, which is in the state of the kingdom of heaven. So these people are the operating forces for the God of this world, Satan, which is why we Christians are the enemies of the state of this world and not to be friends with this world. Our destination lays much higher. Much higher. And I just wish we had more politicians who actually cared about what they said instead of just being reelected and getting more money. Moving on. Let's talk about 9 things that Jesus said that should impact the way a Christian approaches politics. All right. Disciples of Jesus have a different set of values and ideas and methods from the world, and it is of utmost importance that we maintain this distinction. Jesus himself never sought to become involved in politics, and whenever he was given the opportunity, he refused to take sides in their political arguments. Jesus recognized that the devil ruled as the god of this world, influencing all nations of this world, and he placed absolutely no trust in their deceptive power. That's where I lie at this point. I'm an independent. I'll vote how I want. I'm not going to be a Republican. I'm not going to be a Democrat, because both sides are the same wings connected to the same dastardly bird at this point. And don't believe that party line that says, well, you know, if you don't vote, then it's your fault. Do not be peer pressured by people who need your vote. Because it's the same people with millions upon millions of dollars traveling the country in $1 million private jets, eating $1,000 dinners and their $1,000 suits. And then they have $500,000 or $1 million buses that they ride around in. And then they say, we need $100 from you. No thanks. So therefore, Christians should remain separate from earthly governments and politics. That's Jesus' view of it. Christians are to pledge their allegiance to God alone and not to any earthly nation, political party, or political ideology. Because Jesus is our only Lord and Master, we are not to serve any other Lord or Master. Christians should have a different set of values. Matthew 6, verses 19 to 21. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will also be. Earthly governments are continually in pursuit of earthly treasures, or in their own language, economic strength. Jesus warns that Earthly treasures pass away. This is why those who seek earthly treasures are filled with anxiety, anger, envy, and jealousy, what Paul called works of the flesh. And to speak of economic strength, what do you think all this fighting has been about? America versus Russia and America versus China. It's all about who controls the mighty coin of the world. America owns it right now. China will surpass it. And if you thought America was bad, just wait for China. Jesus taught that our hearts should be focused on the heavenly treasures of the kingdom of God, not on earthly things. Therefore, for a disciple, it would be unwise to plan significant time and effort pursuing much of what earthly governments hold as having significant value. Our treasure, our hearts, and our confidence is in heaven, not earth. Look at all these people who are poor. What do they always have? Gold rings, gold watches, gold necklaces, gold frame glasses. They drive cars they can't afford. It's going to get repoed this year. Don't worry about it. They have phones. $1,500, $2,000 phones. Ridiculous that we pay this much for phones. Everything's Gucci. Now, maybe I'm just a poor boy who shops at Tractor Supply, but clothes are clothes to me. But then again, I don't have clothes to go out and impress people. My clothes are either for working or for working. Either working the farm or working a gun, and that's pretty much it. But that's my standard of life now. Praise God. I have that choice now. But for many of you who go out to the clubs every night to impress the guys and the gals, and you're wearing your $100 freaking jeans that have holes all in them and bleach all over them, and your $500 Air Force Ones, and your stupid $50 flat-billed hats, and a lot of you pretend cowboys who have the glitter all over the back of your britches. Keep going to them bars, buddy. Keep getting drunk. Stay in that world of sin. Stay in that illusion that you live in, where you guys bump chests and you talk about how hardcore you are and how you'll beat the other up after you got enough liquor in you. Keep it up. You're going to go far in life. And that's for most of you young men, by the way. If I could go back in time, when I was 19, out of Marine Corps basic training, out of the School of Infantry from Camp Pendleton, and then stationed with 3rd Battalion, 3rd Marines in Hawaii, if I could go back to 19-year-old me now and say, listen, buddy, I'm going to tell you some stuff that you're not going to believe, I would trade so much to go back and to tell 19-year-old me, don't be the idiot you're going to turn out to be. Save yourself a lot of pain. But such is life, now I get to tell you, don't be 19-year-old idiot me wanting to fight every Samoan three times the size of you in Hawaii at a bar because you're drunk. Let's talk about Christians and how they should look to a different source to provide for their needs. No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. For this reason I say to you, do not be worried about your life as to what you will eat or what you will drink, nor for your body, as to what you will put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Do not worry then, saying, what will we eat, or what will we drink, What will we wear for clothing? For the Gentiles eagerly seek all these things, for your heavenly Father knows that you need all these things. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Matthew chapter 6, verses 24 through 34. Whenever we are faced with a need or a concern, we are not to look to stronger political leadership. We are to seek his kingdom, trusting that when we do, God will provide us with what we need. To the extent that we seek God, we do not have to worry. This stands in the stark contrast to the governments of this world who do nothing but worry, for they do not seek God. And when Christians serve God as their master, they are freed from pursuing these things that governments of this world pursue. Look at your leaders who tell you, give me your attention, give me your money, give me your vote and your adulation, while they're caught in one sex scandal after another while they're raping kids. Or they're in, you know, some huge political scandal that most of you in your life would be completely appalled by. But what do? Oh yeah, go figure. That guy's a pedophile. Oh, should have known he's a Democrat, right? At this point we just laugh at it. But that's your government. And by the way, there's plenty of Republicans on that pedophile hunt list too. Let's talk about Christians should refuse to judge. Do not judge, so that you will not be judged. For in the way you judge, you will be judged. And by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take that out of your eye, and behold, the log is in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Matthew 7, verses 1 through 5. Christians are not to judge. This is antithetical to the role and purpose of government. The only way a government can enforce any law is to enforce judgment upon those who disobey that law. To seek to reform the world through government power and necessities of judgment. Jesus taught that the Christians should seek a different method of addressing sin. Rather than acting as judges, Christians are to regard the sins of others as specks as compared to the log in their own eye. Paul would actually go on to forbid Christians from judging those who are outside the church. Among those who are outside the church, we are to be known for our humility, our gentleness, our patience, our tolerance, and love. We are to follow the example of Jesus by esteeming others are better than ourselves, admitting to our own sins, admitting that we are not perfect, but we seek perfection through Christ, which we will never get. Which is why, when you secretly rail against one of your workers, don't be mad when you find out that they've railed against you, because you know that in part time, you've said bad things about them as well. Christians should seek a different path to greatness. But Jesus called them to himself and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them? It is not this way among you, but whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you shall be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. Matthew 20, verses 25 to 28. Recently, I put out a show called Rules for Rulers. And I want to give you my tactical, practical experience as a leader in combat, in law enforcement, in the military, as a leader of your household. You are to serve those under you. They do not serve you. For all you parents out there who tell your kids to do, to, you know, fill up your water for you, fetch your food, fetch your clothes, you know, fetch your boots. You treat your children like slaves at times. Do you ever do that for your children? Do you ever assist them? Or what about your coworkers? When you're busy disseminating orders, do you tell people to sharpen your own pencils or do you do it yourself? Do you tell people to go get these papers or do you do it yourself? Do you eventually build yourself a throne behind your desk, acting like if you're the king of the office? The seat and power of a king is to serve. He serves them, not they him. A king seeks out his people to say, how can I establish your family in this next generation? How can I assist you, which assists the kingdom? But instead, you have people that become lovers of self and iniquity instead of lovers of truth and righteousness. Let me get off my soapbox there before I wax poetically for too long. The quest of power and ruling authority that criticizes and characterizes the world is not to characterize Christians. The greatest in the kingdom of Christ do not rule, they serve. The world is all about exercising power over others, leading to continual political fights as various parties contend for that power, and Christians should have absolutely no desire to take part in these fights, because you cannot win them, as many of you try to with all your endless amounts of lawsuits against the government. How many of you have won? Especially the sovereign citizens that I've dealt with before. Every other week they have a new lawsuit. Christians should render to God everything that is rightfully His. Tell us then, what do you think? Is it lawful to give a poll tax to Caesar or not? But Jesus perceived their malice and said, why are you testing me, you hypocrites? Show me the coin used for the poll tax. And they brought him a denarius. And he said to them, whose likeness and inscription is this? They said to him, Caesar's. Then he said to them, then render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. And hearing this, they were amazed, and leaving him, they went away. Matthew 22, verses 15 to 22. This text is frequently misunderstood. For that reason, there are a few articles that are wrote about this, but in short, rather than approving of giving service to Caesar, Jesus referred to the likeness and inscription on the coin, evoking strong references to the law in which God has proclaimed as the only sovereign ruler over everything. When Jesus said, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the thing gifts that are God's, he was sharply challenging his questions to questioners to decide for themselves the question of who rightly deserved their allegiance. If Caesar's claims to be rightful ruler of the world were true, then God's claims to sovereignty were false. If God's claims to sovereignty were true, then Caesar's claims were illegitimate. If we really render to God the things that are God's, there should be nothing left over for Caesar. Christians should recognize that the nations are under demonic influence. And the devil said to him, I will give you all this domain and its glory, for it has been handed over to me, and I give it to whomever I wish. Therefore, if you worship before me, it shall be yours. And Jesus answered him, it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God and serve him only. Luke chapter 4, verses 6 to 8. So first of all, it is interesting to notice that Jesus never refuted that all the kingdoms of the world had been handed over to him to give to whomever he wishes, he being Satan. In fact, Jesus frequently referred to Satan as the ruler of the world. Likewise, Paul would later refer to the devil as the god of this world and the prince of power of the air. John also understood that the whole world lies in the power of the evil one. So how much trust should Christians place in demonically controlled earthly governments? Do you not think you put a little too much faith in them? As much as Jesus did, which is absolutely none, you should have no faith as a Christian in these governments. Interestingly, the reason Jesus declined Satan's offer was because Jesus understood that we are to serve God and God alone. He understood that serving God, seeking political glory, are mutually exclusive things. Christians should remember that Jesus avoided political and legal disputes. Someone in the crowd said to him, Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me. But he said to him, Man, who appointed me a judge or arbiter over you? Then he said to them, Beware and be on guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has abundance does his life consist of his possessions. Luke chapter 12, verses 13 to 15. Once again, Jesus is faced with a legal political question. He responds by asking, Who made me a judge? Jesus claims that he did not come to judge earthly legal political disputes. To the contrary, Jesus came to set us free from sinful foundations of the disputes, such as greed. Jesus didn't have anything to say about legal, political, governmental disputes. And neither should we. That's going to upset a lot of you who wear a MAGA hat everywhere you go just to rile somebody up. I get it. Choose you this day who you shall serve, Donald Trump or Jesus Christ. Christians should maintain sharp distinction from the world. If the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, because of this, the world hates you. John 15, verses 18 to 19. Jesus' disciples follow a different Lord and Master, and therefore, they look at the world in a very different way. Christians are frequently described as being different from the world, or foreigners, exiles, or strangers in the world. And as a result, we should not be surprised when the world hates us. If, however, we are indistinguishable from the world in our values, our ideals, or our methods, we have missed, at that point, what we are called to be. As we seek to follow Jesus, we should have the same relationship to the surrounding culture and political powers as Jesus had. Christians should refuse to fight like the world fights. Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would be fighting so that I would not be handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this realm." John 18, verses 36 to 37. The reason Jesus didn't fight for political power is because the evidence Jesus gave to prove that his kingdom is not of this world was that his disciples weren't fighting either. His kingdom is not of this world. The world fights not only with violence, but also with evil speaking towards political opponents. Disciples of Jesus shouldn't have any part in these physical or verbal fights. To the contrary, everything we do is to be done in love. This is strikingly different from the kingdoms of this world, which rely on physical violence and verbal sword swinging to maintain their power and influence, which is one of the reasons why I'm done with politics. I don't care who does what politically. I'm calling out the sin. I have spent so many years being caught up in MAGA this and Republican that and the hell with the Democrats and the leftists. But what did the Republicans do for me? The one thing that's good about Make America Great Again is that God is getting a little bit more of the forefront than the politics. The problem is, that's coming from we the people. But we elect people in power that don't exactly act godly. Nor are they really influencing laws based off of biblical structure either. So I have to question a lot of this when I see it. Because I myself have been guilty many times yelling at the wind in vanity. Like he teaches in Ecclesiastes, I'm constantly yelling at the wind in vain, wishing I could change its direction with my anger, but I'm just yelling in the wind. Jesus taught his disciples to live a different kind of life from the world around them. Jesus never took part in earthly politics. He recognized that the kingdoms of this world were under influence of Satan. And he only sought to build one kingdom, the kingdom of God. So I challenge you, be more kind to your neighbors, be more thoughtful to your neighbors, help those who need help. Pray more than you watch YouTube. Spend more time with your kid than you do your phone. Get on your knees more than you crack open a beer. And get right with God. Don't worry about Donald Trump. Don't worry about Nancy Pelosi or Joe Biden. They are not going to be masters of heaven. You do right amongst your people that's in your area of operations, and you worry about yourself. That's what I suggest a lot of people who continuously email me. Things are getting bad. What do I do? Now is the time to start cutting cords with people who are tearing you down, people who are a hindrance to your life, people who are siphoning off every bit of money that you have, get rid of these people. Focus on yourself, your family, your God, and walk in righteousness. That's the best advice I have for you. And if you live in a suburb or a democratic city, you may consider moving out of it, just in case. But that's all I got for you today, guys. God bless you all. Thank you all for listening. If you'd like to, at any point in time, email me about any of this, because I know there's going to be plenty of people who are going to hate on what I've said, AmericanVindictaShow@gmail.com, or leave it in the comments section on YouTube and on Rumble. And make sure that you sign up for Heroes Nations. That's the official backup, gsradio.net. Thank you, Todd. That's where the show is always found. If you'd like to help keep American Vindicta Show up and running, you can go to the Gibson Go page. Just type in American Vindicta once you get there. Or you can go to www.AmericanVindictaShow.com, and there's a donation section there that'll also show you how you can donate. The winter storm's still coming. I'm about to go outside and get back to work. Y'all take care. I'll see you next time. Stay frosty. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.